Kingwood. Good to be back with you this week. Turn with me, if you will, to Mark chapter 1. Mark chapter 1, we are going to begin today a series of messages called Just Gospel, or Just Go, Mark's Urgent Jesus. One of the themes I love about the Gospel of Mark, it is my favorite gospel, is that there is an urgency about Mark. It's only 16 chapters. It's the shortest and the fastest moving of all the Gospels, and Jesus' key word in the Gospel is at once, suddenly, urgently, at that very time. That little phrase, the Greek word euthus, appears over and over and over, and I love that because I think there is no more urgent and important thing for the church to get a handle on in 2025 than the matter of discipleship, being Jesus' disciple. And so we're going to talk today about following Jesus and where it all begins in Mark chapter 1. I want to begin, though, somewhere else. I want to begin with probably a familiar image to many of you. It was at a Texaco station about 40 years ago. I think it was the summer of, about this time of year actually, I think it was 1987. I'd stayed at Abilene Christian over the summer. All of my roommates had gone home or off to internships or jobs. I'd stayed in the house a bunch of us were living in because I was taking some summer courses and I was doing part-time youth ministry for full-time pay. Wait, I got that opposite. I was doing full-time youth ministry for part-time pay out at Merkel, out west of Abilene. So I was working with the youth group out there. So I was taking classes that summer. I'd had a class in the morning. In the afternoon one day, very hot day, I went across the road, across I-20, to the only thing there at the time was a Texaco station. And I happened to have a Texaco credit card at the time. That's the way we all paid for gas back then. You had the actual gas credit card. And so I took my little Texaco card and my little Chevy Cavalier across the road over there, where there's now a Walmart and all Chick-fil-A's and all kinds of stuff over there. It was nothing then, except a Texaco station. I went over, I pulled up to one of the bays because the other one was blocked by a big bus. And I gassed up my little car and went inside because there was no pay at the pump then, so you had to go inside and talk to a human being. And so I took my credit card inside, but it was a small room and it was packed with people, just wall to wall. And so I squeezed in and managed to get up to the counter, and I was behind this little short guy who was paying for gas, had his back to me. I guess he was paying for everybody in the room and all of their drinks and chips and snacks and all that sort of thing. And I wasn't paying much attention. I was just waiting my turn until I heard him talk. He spoke and then he turned around and he looked at me and he acknowledged me. And I said the dumbest thing anybody has ever said. You ready? I said, "Are you Willie Nelson?" He said, "All my life." And I realized then that I'm in the presence of Texas greatness here. This is his bus. This is his band. He said, "What's your name?" I told him. He said, "What do you do?" And I said, "I go to school across the street over here. I'm studying to be a preacher." He said, "Man, that's far out." He said, "You go to ACU?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I grew up in Abbott, Texas, with a bunch of Church of Christ folks." And he said, "Man, those people can sing." And I said, "Well, some of them can." He said, "Would you like to go to my show tonight?" Well, he wasn't playing in Abilene. He was playing in Odessa, which is a couple hours west. And I said, I've got a paper to write. And, you know, I mean, all this stuff's in my head about this stuff I've got to do and get done. I said, I just don't think I can do that. And he said, well, that's okay. He said, it's nice to meet you, and he went on his way. And I've looked back on that ever since, and I've told students over the years, it's a perfect example of missing an opportunity. I could have at least taken the ticket, even if I didn't go. I could have asked him to sign something. I didn't even get an autograph. I probably could have gotten a tour of his bus if I'd asked. No telling what was on it. I've often wondered about that. I wonder if the disciples ever felt that way. I wonder if there were people who felt like they missed their opportunity with Jesus. I really like this picture. Can you see the rainbow in it? Yeah. My wife and I took that out our hotel room window. We were staying at the Hotel King Herod there in Tiberias, right on the banks of the Sea of Galilee. We were resting one afternoon on one of our trips over there many years ago, and my wife was just out on the deck of our room, a little patio, and she said, come here. And so I got up from taking a nap or whatever, and I went over to the window, and a storm had come up over the lake. Suddenly. I mean, bright sunshine to a storm and white caps on the water. And the wind was blowing, and dark clouds, and there was lightning, and it was just pouring, and then all of a sudden this rainbow appeared. And then it was gone. And I often think about, this is where, now that's the southern end of the Sea of Galilee, but up at the northern end of the lake is where it happened for these guys. In Mark chapter 1. I've often wondered what they thought about that. I've often wondered about that story that appears in the Gospels about how Jesus walked out to them on the water one night. Remember that? That was right here. That one night Jesus was praying. It was after they'd fed the 5,000. Exhausting day. The crowd had been dispersed. And Jesus went to a place by himself to renew himself and pray, and during the night the wind got up on the lake. Remember that? And he could see that the boat that they were on was being buffeted or beaten up by the waves. And he went out to them about 3 o'clock in the morning. Remember that story? Now, the disciples had been through a lot with Jesus when that happened. They'd just seen him feed 5,000 people. They'd seen him do some amazing things. But I've always wondered, what on earth was it that made Peter think, well, I'll just walk out there to him. I can do that. Maybe Peter ever looked back on that as a missed opportunity. Maybe it was the other disciples who looked back on that and thought, I wish I'd done what Peter did. You ever had a chance to do something, to be part of something, and you look back on it later and you realize, man, I just missed it? Fast forward from that story I told you a few minutes ago about Willie Nelson. A decade or more ago, this had to have been 10, 15 years ago, I was teaching a class at ACU, which I do every semester, and I had a class, big classroom. I remember it was room 114 of the Bible building, which I think holds right at 100 people. So we probably had 90-something students in there. A big room full of people, first, second day of class. I told them that story just to kind of give them some ACU history and tell them something funny. And one of the students raised his hands and he said, that's my grandpa. And I said, who? And he said, Willie Nelson. I said, Willie Nelson is your grandfather? He said, yeah. And so I wound up getting his autograph. A signed photo of Willie Nelson. And it simply said, you should have come to the concert that day. You ever missed your chance on something? You ever gotten up to the plate and just whiffed? You ever second-guessed yourself? You ever talked yourself out of something? Here's one that probably is common to a lot of. You ever just overthought it? In Jewish culture, young boys were raised on the Torah, the law, the first five books of the Old Testament, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, the law, the books of instruction from the time they were six on. Now, girls were educated differently and informally in the home, usually by the mothers and the grandmothers, but little boys, from the age of six on, that's where they got their foundations, was listening to a local rabbi, and so between the ages of 6 and 10, little Jewish boys went to the synagogue and they learned and they memorized. And then at age 10, they gave them a plan B. And at age 10, you learned your father's trade, whether that was potter or merchant or farmer or fisherman. You learned to do what your father did to provide for the family. But if you went on and did very well with the rabbi and you passed your star tests or your SATs or whatever it was, and you became an honor graduate, you got to move on and study the deeper stuff, other books of the Old Testament, the prophets and the books of history and the writings. And that went on to age 15. The best of the best got the rabbi's special attention. You got to be a, what's the word? Disciple. You got to be a disciple. And this is where the rabbi was thinking ahead, like who's going to replace me? I think this young man could grow up to do what I do, to be a rabbi, to orient his entire life around teaching. It was apprenticeship, is what it was. It's the same thing the fathers were doing with the trades. So the carpenter was training his sons to be a carpenter, showing them in the workshop, here's how you cut, here's how you measure, here's how you insert a dowel. Here's all the pieces. Or to be a fisherman or whatever the trade was. And so it was apprenticeship. And the way you applied for apprenticeship as a young man was you had to go to the rabbi and you had to say, "Can I be your disciple?" It was the way you made application. And then you went into a period of time where you were learning at a deeper level and you were grilled and you were tested by the rabbi. And the rabbi was constantly evaluating you. Can he grow up to do what I do? Sometimes the answer was no. In fact, the majority of times the answer was probably no. And so you went back then to being a carpenter. You went back to being a potter. You went back to being a shepherd or a farmer or a fisherman. You went back to the family trade because you had now fallen into the category of the not quite good enoughs. Sometimes the rabbi would evaluate you and say, "This kid's special. Yes, he can do what I do. One day he could take my place." And so then the rabbi would say, formally, "Follow me." You want to be a rabbi? Follow me. The expression was, "May the rabbi's dust fall upon you. May you follow the rabbi so closely, may you be in such close proximity to his life and to his teaching that you and him, you're indistinguishable. His dust is on you. Which brings us back to Mark 1. And so Jesus is walking beside the Sea of Galilee. And he sees Simon and his brother, Andrew. Peter and Andrew. Casting a net into the lake, for they were, what? Not good enough. They'd gone back to the family trade. Right? Come. Follow me. Jesus said. And I'll send you out to fish for people. At once they left their nets and they followed him. When he'd gone just a little farther, he saw James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John, those sons of thunder. They're in a boat too, preparing their nets because they're not good enough. They're just fishing for a living. Without delay. See, at once, there's the urgency of Mark's gospel. There's that word, uthus. Immediately, at once, he called them. And they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired men, and they followed him too. So, Jesus comes into his ministry, as we all know, around the age of 30. And he sees some guys, he goes down, he doesn't go to the university, he doesn't go to the military academy, he doesn't go over to Caesarea or to Jerusalem, to any of the seats of power where there are powerful, wealthy, influential, you know, heavy hitter types. Jesus goes to the boat dock. Capernaum, fishing village. And he sees these guys who are following the family trade. The not good enoughs. And he says, good enough. Good enough. Follow me. You want to follow me? And we're told that immediately, uthus, they left their nets. And maybe that's always seemed like kind of a strange thing to you. By the way, almost exactly the same thing happens with Matthew. Except Matthew is at his tax collector's booth, right? But it's basically the same story. He approaches them in their workplace, in their trade, and says, follow me, and they immediately put everything down. And maybe that's always seemed like a strange thing to you. I want to take a little bit of the mystery out of that for you this morning. Probably it was not that strange. For one thing, these guys have probably heard Jesus before. They probably have some kind of background with him. They probably heard him teach. But I want you to know something this morning, that when the rabbi, calls you, you go. You put everything down and you go. When you get the invitation, you pick up and go. Immediately they followed him. They believed in him. And I don't know how old these guys are. Maybe they're in their teens. Maybe they're in their early 20s. Probably pretty young men. But the whole course of their lives has been changed. Because see, and here's what one of the central things I want to say to you this morning as we begin this series. See, the call of Jesus, the invitation of Jesus, folks, it's for everybody. You don't have to be somebody special in the eyes of the world. You certainly don't need to have your act together. The difference between Jesus and those other rabbis at Capernaum and Bethsaida and these other local villages, Nazareth, these Galilean villages, the call of Jesus, it is universal. No one left behind if you don't want to be. So, Jairus, remember Jairus, synagogue ruler in Capernaum, pretty important dude, but he couldn't help his dying 12-year-old daughter, could he? Desperate man. Jairus, the rabbi's call is for you. His call is for the hemorrhaging, unclean woman. We don't even know her name. All she wanted to do was just get close to him and maybe touch the fringe of his prayer shawl. The call is for her. The call is for Matthew or Levi, his Jewish name. The tax collector, and Zacchaeus, the tax collector, and all of the other tax collectors who apparently flocked to Jesus. The sick and tired tax collectors who were sick and tired of being sick and tired, exploiting people, taking advantage. The call is for them. Jesus' call is for a Samaritan woman who winds up going to the well in the middle of the day, carrying her jar, but more importantly, carrying her shame and her brokenness. Boy, the call was for her, wasn't it? The call was for Nicodemus, member of the Sanhedrin, a seat on the Supreme Court. But his seat on the Supreme Court didn't keep him from paying the rabbi a secret midnight visit, did it? The call was for Nicodemus too. His call is for fishermen and farmers and soldiers and lawyers. His call is for Mary with her demons, all her demons. His call, turns out, it's for Gentiles. Who'd have thunk it? Gentiles. Samaritans. Oh my goodness. Samaritans. His call is for lost boys. The ones who are lost in the far country because they run away, and the ones who are lost in the back pasture, even though they stayed at home. The call of Jesus is for everybody. It's for dying criminals. It's for weeping widows. For blind beggars. It's for the addicted. It's for the anxious. It's for the burned out and the worn out and the tuned out and the turned out. His call is for plumbers and professors. It's for teachers and techies. It's for moms and dads. See, no one is left behind by this rabbi. So back to the walking on water. Peter, what say you? Peter, of all people. Peter needed a lot of second chances, didn't he? So there he is with the storm on the water and the waves and the wind. And the waves swashing over into the boat. Is that a ghost? What is that? No, it's got to be Jesus, right? By this time, it's got to be Jesus. We've seen too much. And I want you to think about it this way. What made Peter put his foot out on the water and even think for one moment he could do that? We just talked about it. Peter, like all young Jewish men, since he is old enough to remember going to the synagogue at 6 years old with the rabbis, Peter has oriented all of his life around this sort of moment. He thinks he's found the rabbi. Not just any rabbi. The rabbi. Peter has oriented everything in his world around this. He's followed Jesus wherever he went. He slept wherever Jesus slept. He's tried to say the things that he thought Jesus wanted him to say. He's tried to do the things that Jesus wanted him to do. And so now, here out on the water, in the middle of the night, in the dark, in the storm, is it really any surprise that Peter says, "Lord, you say it, I'll do it"? Of course, Jesus says, "Come on. Come on." And of course, you've already jumped ahead, right? You know how this story ends. Spoiler alert, he sinks, right? I'm just telling you, it wasn't Peter's lack of faith in Jesus, I don't think. I think it was Peter's lack of faith in Peter. And remember something. And I think Peter knew this. At least deep down inside, I think he knew it. He didn't live it very well, but he knew it. That when the rabbi calls you, it's because you can do it. He doesn't call you unless he knows you can. And so all of our lives, we've heard from preachers in pulpits just like this on Sunday morning and many other places, we've been told since we were 6 years old and older, right? The key is to believe in Jesus. And I am not diminishing that in any way this morning. I encourage you very much to believe in Jesus. But I also encourage you to think about how God believes in you. That's why he came. That's why he died, actually. And so he says to us, what does he say to us? Well, he says all kinds of things to us, but he says, among other things, go. Go with the gospel. Go with the good news into the world. Go and do what? Make disciples. I've been making disciples. I've been calling disciples. You go call disciples to me. Question. Would he say that if we couldn't do it? I know what you're thinking. Man, I'm so ordinary. You think these guys weren't ordinary? It doesn't get any more ordinary than Peter, Andrew, James, and John. All have been called. Fishermen have been called. It wasn't a glorious profession necessarily. But they were Jesus' first employees, if you will. They were his first hires. Fishermen are called. Ballers are called. And people with no skills at all are called. Skin color, doesn't matter. First language, background, ethnicity, family of origin, socioeconomic. Doesn't matter. It does not matter. It does not matter how messed up you are. It does not matter how messed up you think you are. See, the only thing that matters is if the rabbi calls you. And if the rabbi calls you, he believes in you. So you can. You say, I can be just like him? That was the whole point of following the rabbi, was to become a rabbi like the rabbi. Can I be just like him? He says, yes. Otherwise, he wouldn't say, follow me. Follow me. Watch me. Listen to me. See how I treat people. Watch what I do. Absorb my character and who I am and how I think. Be my apprentice. I want you to know this morning before you leave this place, I don't know where you are in your life, in your calling, but I want you to hear this. You can do what he did. You can extend mercy. You can extend justice. You can extend compassion. You can extend healing. You can extend love to hungry, hurting, beaten down people. And last I checked, they're everywhere. They're everywhere. The gospel is for everybody. We all have guilt. We all have shame. We all have within us, I think, that sense of maybe I missed my opportunity. Maybe I whiffed. Maybe I struck out. Maybe I blew it. Maybe my window of opportunity. I'll guarantee you that's what those guys down at the boat dock thought. You know why they're fishing? Because it was their only option. Their window of opportunity had closed. And so now we just fish. The rabbi comes along and he says, oh, you're going to fish all right. But it's a whole other kind of fishing you're about to be into. We all have that sense of not being good enough. And I'm telling you this morning, the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ is that that ain't true. There is no such thing. This morning, God loves you more than you can begin to understand. And He wants you at the table with Him. Do not miss out on the greatest opportunity of your life to follow the greatest rabbi there ever was, the greatest teacher there ever was. And I'll say this to you this morning, and I'll probably say it again during this series. Being a disciple is not really an option, because you will be a disciple of something. Disciple just means student, learner, follower. You will follow something. You will follow someone. You will be shaped. You will be formed. You will be apprenticed around some worldview, some philosophy, some set of values. I'm just saying to you this morning, make sure it's Jesus. Oh my goodness, make sure it's Jesus. Because all those other things, they'll let you down. They'll break your heart. Have you ever this morning said yes to the rabbi? Maybe you have, maybe it was a long time ago, and maybe you've kind of wandered off the path and haven't been much about that. I'm saying come back to it. Maybe you've never said yes in the first place. Maybe you've thought about it. Maybe you haven't thought about it much. I'm saying start thinking about it today. Who are you going to follow? What are you going to follow? Later on, in another exchange with Peter, Peter says to the Lord, "To whom shall we go?" In other words, now that we're following you, there really are no other options. "To whom shall we go, Lord? You have the words of life." Jesus says to you this morning, you are good enough. Wherever you are, whatever your life's been about, whatever background that you bring, you're in. Follow me. Become my disciple. Let's pray as we finish this morning. God, we thank you for our time together, and we echo the words of Peter today. To whom shall we go? Even if we're falling into the water when we thought we could walk on it, it's better than not following you at all. Lord, help us in our walk. Help us to follow you more closely. May your rabbi dust be all over each person in this room as we live this week following you. It's in the name of our teacher, our rabbi, Jesus, that we pray and say together. Let's stand and sing.